This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
Started with power rankings, Bus, and some of the thoughts we had about Notre Dame and Cornell. And we're going to get right into that right away because you see a lot of Notre Dame games and I see a lot of Cornell games. So I think that's a place we can start here and break down what we're talking about. For the Irish, I mean, they've run into the Gophers and Badgers recently, but obviously a spectacular season. What are the three things that make them go, and what are the two or three things that might cause you a little bit of concern?
Well, I think the three things that that make them go, one, you got to start with the goaltending. Obviously, you know, Cale Morris, you know, nobody really knew anything about him coming into the year. He hadn't played much, actually had really not played at all behind Cal Peterson last year. So that was obviously a huge question mark. And he's been really good. And you know, you kind of keep waiting for the other shoe to drop there and and for him to be, you know, maybe average or, you know, serviceable. But he's been rock solid really since taking over the full-time starter's job in late October, and that kind of coincided with them getting on their getting on that 16 game unbeaten streak, or winning streak, I should say. I would say number two is their defensive depth is really good, and not just in the fact that they've got a lot of defensemen that can play, but they've also got a lot of defensemen. Their defensemen can do different things. You know, you've got a couple of more mobile guys in Jordan Gross, Bobby Nardella. You've got a couple of big physical guys, thinking Dennis Gilbert, who also has a little bit of an offensive flair to him. And then you've got kind of a couple of younger guys in Tori Dello and Matt Hellickson, who've played really well. And then third is I think there are the final key for them is Jeff Jackson. I mean, he's really done a terrific job in tailoring his game plan to this team's strengths as they've evolved throughout the season. And last year, obviously, you had Cal Peterson, but you also had Anders Bjork, and really their entire offensive attack ran through him, especially on the power play. I mean, it was basically him on the half wall creating opportunities for his line mates and for the rest of the guys on the PP. And now they've changed that a little bit, more shooting from the point, getting traffic in front of the net. You know, there were some hiccups early, but they've really come around, and he's done a nice job of managing his assets.
Yeah, that's always a nice feather to have in your cap when you can get there. How have you seen the team change? What were a couple of those things that you might have seen from Notre Dame, adjustments or strategies as the season's evolved?
Well, I think you know, last year when they get into a bit of a tight spot, or if they need something, you'd see the team look towards Bjork and maybe look towards a Jake Evans, who's still on the team, obviously, but and kind of there was that anticipation of, okay, he's going to make something happen. It's going to start with him. You know, now you don't have that one transcendent offensive player that really stirs the pot. It's more of a team approach, and you're seeing different guys chip in as the season has progressed. Evans got off to a great start. He's tapered off a little bit. You've got Ogilvy, who's been a steady goal scorer now for a couple of seasons. Dylan Malmquist has played really well since he was hurt earlier in the year, and he's come back and he's played really well and done a really nice job. You know, they've got an energy line, I guess you could call it a third line, centered by Mike O'Leary that, you know, really when the team has come out flat, they've done a nice job of getting in, winning some battles in the corners, digging the puck out and making some things happen and really sparking the team. So, they're more balanced, I think, than they were last year and less likely to kind of, you know, focus on, okay, what can one guy do for us? How is he going to spark us? It's been a really nice team-based approach.
The more I look into this Notre Dame team, I see some similarities actually with Cornell. And there's, as you know, we talked about in the national polls and inch power rankings proved out, there's not much to separate these two teams. And you see only two guys on this Notre Dame team that have 10 or more goals, and that's 10 for Ogilvy and 12 for Cal Burke. And then you get the same thing with Cornell with 12 goals from Anthony Angelo, who's been red hot lately, and then 11 goals for Trevor Yates, who did most of his scoring in the first semester. So Yates kind of carried the load early on, and Angelo this last 10 games, he's got 10 goals, and he's getting them in bunches. He had a hat trick at Harvard. He had two goals one night against Colgate. So this is a guy who's really come on. He's a Penguins draft pick. He's a big winger. He can skate and really does a lot of good things. So he's getting hot, and his line has been good. He plays in a line with Mitch Vanderland, and that group is really good. I think if you asked – well, you never get an answer to say who's the best player on your team. But if you had to ask, you know, the Cornell coaching staff, my hunch is that they would say Vanderland. He's got 4 goals and 12 assists. He's a playmaker. He plays all 200 feet real well. And that's kind of the top group. But you get a lot of balance, too. You know, there's 3 lines out there most nights, and they mix up some of the combinations, and they mix up the lineup, you know, based on maybe if injuries are part of the deal, maybe if it's a guy didn't play well or up to the standard that is expected, I should say, the night before, that he could be scratched. So they've got a lot going on. Alex Rauter has been good around the break. Jeff Malott's a big guy. He's missed some games recently due to injury, but he can really skate and he contributes a lot. And then you got, I mean, the guy who's the highest draft pick on this team is a junior centerman named Bo Sterrett. He was a Chicago Blackhawks pick a few years back, and he's got 6 points in 20 games, but he's really taken to kind of a checking line defensive centerman's role, and he's always out there for those end-of-game D-zone faceoffs, you know, or penalty killing. So that's another thing that you bring to the table. Cam Donaldson's a pretty energetic freshman who's done some nice things. Brendan Locke, another freshman. Morgan Barron has been the most productive. He's a New York Rangers draft among the Cornell freshmen. I haven't yet mentioned any defense or goalies yet because that's the kind of forwards that they come at you throughout the game. Different guys can get it done, and they don't score a ton, but, you know, they're top 10 in the country in scoring. They're 3.75, 3.8 goals a game, and all of that without a guy averaging a point per night. So that shows you how balanced they are.
Anything else? That balance is the key.
I mean, we got to talk about the freshman goalie, Matt Galita.
Yeah.
He's, you know, it's so easy for people who are disconnected, and, you know, Cornell doesn't play on TV a ton, so it's hard to see them. But, you know, you go back to Lanavue and McKee and Scrivens and Isles and Gillum, you know, they've always had the goalie more or less. And this guy Gillum, the freshman, has taken control in the crease. He was given the opportunity due to injuries to Hayden Stewart. He was kind of the recent backup to Gillum, and Hayden Stewart's a senior, and he has a shutout and played real well against Canisius over the Christmas break. It was like a mid-December game or late December game. But Goliath's got six shutouts, 14-2-1, 938 save percentage, 1.5 goals against, and he plays such a quiet game. Like, he's very efficient in movement, stays on his angles, tracks the puck well, generally good with rebounds. There's a couple in every game that maybe you'd look at if you were the true perfectionist, but he's so different than a guy like Andy Isles, who was athletic and active and aggressive, and he'd make a save on his side and he'd make a save with his leg in the air, and he'd get out and throw the puck around the boards and then race back into the crease, and all kinds of things like that. You don't see that from Gillum, from Goliath, and his game is so quiet and it's so refreshing to watch that you wonder sometimes if he's even breaking a sweat back there. So that's good to see from him. If there was a point of concern for Cornell, it's probably defense depth. They rely a lot. They get a lot of minutes from certainly Yanni Caldas. He's probably the most talented offensive defenseman of the bunch. Alec McRae is a big minutes man. He scored the game-winning goal in the home game against Harvard in the last minute of play, and the place went bananas. So that was a big goal for the Big Red there. And they've got some freshmen there too. So this is a team that's built for this year, for right now. I mean, if you read the national polls, they're number one in the country. If there's a point of concern in addition to depth on the blue line, I think it kind of goes against the patterns that this Cornell team has shown so far, is you don't have that one guy to go to, say, oh, Jesus, third period, we need a goal. Can we get that from, blank, insert name here, that frontline top guy who's going to go out and put the team on his back for a couple shifts and get some scoring chances generated. So that, when it comes down to it in the tournament and you get all those one-game scenarios, it's kind of nice to have that. But at the same time, they get it from so many places, they don't need to to rely on that one guy, and everyone can kind of stick to what they do and work from there.
Yeah, that timely goal scoring has been something, really that Notre Dame hasn't needed all season, which is kind of funny because they don't. My biggest concern with them moving forward, and it'll become more magnified the closer we get to the playoffs and eventually the NCAA tournament, is they typically don't get off to very good starts. Especially the first 10 minutes, I think they've been a little bit better recently in December, I guess you could say, in late November, but they're only plus one in the first period in goals. Mm-hmm. They generally don't come out and play kind of with that confidence that you would expect a team that has been on a run like they were, and has been as successful as they've have all season. They don't play like that. The first period is usually a kind of a feeling out process. And then, second and third, they've been really good. But, especially in the first 10 minutes, they really haven't been able to really take control of the pace and the flow and impose their will on other teams. That's something I can see coming up to really bite them once we get in these one game playoff scenarios.
Well, that's the tournament. That's what we deal with. So that goes for every team.
Exactly.
And then let's segue that to what's going on around the rest of the country. I think if you put 16 teams on that bracket tonight, maybe 11, I wouldn't be surprised if they won it. And then four more would be mildly surprised. And then maybe there's one or two teams who wouldn't be, who wouldn't be part of that at all. So, I mean, there's a lot of depth here, and there's a lot to sort through here in February as the league races wind down. I mean, Notre Dame's obviously got a big lead in the Big Ten standings, but all the other leagues are so close. We kind of pepped Providence as the, you know, kind of our preferred team right now out of Hockey East, and they're in third place. Cornell's just a point ahead of Clarkson, who got off to an incredible start and have continued to do good things. And then obviously the NCHC and WCHA are bunched pretty tightly together, as is Atlantic Hockey. I think the last time I saw the standings, there were seven teams in Atlantic Hockey within 6 points of first or something like that. What's the one
team?
Yeah,
you can. I mean, you can go to all the.
Go ahead.
I was going to say in Atlantic Hockey, you can go all the way down to Air Force at, what are they, at 18? Canisius is at 26 in first place.
Yeah.
And Air Force has got a, you know, they've got a game in hand against everybody in front of them, except for RIT. And in some cases, they've got three and four games in hand. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of hockey to be played there, clearly.
Yeah, that Air Force game against Sacred Heart was actually postponed due to the government shutdown, so Air Force couldn't play that a couple weeks ago. So yeah, they've got a game in hand, and yeah, you're 26 points in first place is Canisius, and Holy Cross also with 26, and then 18 points for Air Force in ninth. So that's pretty good. I guess maybe which team? Let's pick a team in each league. This is kind of a Nate and Brad move. Obviously, our good friends at College Hockey Inc. and the Grand Forks Herald, Nate Ewell and Brad Schlossman. If you're not listening to their podcast, certainly it's called College Hockey Today. Go out and find it. It's my weekly ritual is to download that and play it on Friday when I leave the office and I'm on my way to the rink. So it's my College Hockey pregame show for the weekend, and it's good stuff. But let's pick a team in each league that's not in first right now that you would think could win. You go first with I'll go second, and we'll just go alphabetical. Start with Atlantic Hockey.
Oh boy, Atlantic Hockey. Well, you see, even though Air Force has all those games in hand against most of the teams ahead of them, I think they're probably a little far out to make a run, but that's a strange league because everybody scores a ton of goals, but everybody gives up a ton of goals. So I don't know, it's like you're sort of pinning your hopes on which team will get hot at the right time. I think from an experience standpoint, Robert Morris is probably the team that makes the most sense if you had to hitch a wagon, just because they, obviously, Derek Schooley's been there a long time, and they've had a lot of postseason success in that league. And, I think that the expectation is there with Robert Morris that, okay, we're going to, we're not here just to finish in the top four of this league or whatever. You know, our expectation is to win the league championship. And, they've got the highest scoring player in the league, and I just think that ultimately that experience and that's ultimately going to carry over down the stretch.
They're my pick.
And that's before, or not the highest scoring, I should say, second highest scoring player in the league.
Yeah, well, you got Brady Ferguson, who's getting a lot of NHL attention. And then, I mean, two other things to keep in mind here. They're 6-2-1 in their last nine. And one of those was a 2-1 loss to Providence. And five of their last eight games are at home. So I think Robert Morris is one of those teams that we might be able to look at a little bit. Notre Dame, I think we can skip over. I don't think anybody's going to catch them. But that tournament's looking more intriguing from what we've seen lately from
Yeah.
certainly Ohio State and Wisconsin. And you know, Minnesota's always dangerous, and Michigan's played well this second semester. So that the tournament, I think, is going to be a better watch than the last month of the regular season, is just in terms of standings. But there's a lot of good teams there, and you could see five of them, I think, even possibly six, in the national tournament, which is pretty crazy. You
Yeah,
want to
I
get
got to
to
see
Ohio
Wisconsin a
State
couple
now,
weeks ago.
or this weekend you'll see Ohio State, is that right? Or 2 weeks?
Next
2 weeks,
weekend.
okay.
Yeah,
So that's
I'm
February
looking forward to it.
February 9,
February 8th
10.
and 9th.
8th and 9th, yeah.
9, 10.
9, 10, whatever.
8th and 9th, something like that.
Well, they might have that Thursday thing.
But,
Big Ten likes that.
I saw Wisconsin a couple weeks ago at Notre Dame, and even though they lost, they are an extremely talented team. That when they're, I think when everybody's pointed in the right direction, and I'm not saying that to say that there's a dissension or anything, but when they're all pulling the same way, they're tough. They're really tough. Just so Trent Frederick is a terrific player. I think there's times when they're still a young team in a lot of ways, mostly age and class, but so I think that they're still figuring out some things in terms of consistency. So you kind of, they can be like really exciting to watch in 1 minute, and the next minute they can just be unbelievably maddening. So if they, they're a team I'm keeping an eye on as somebody, as if they can get it together, and get some consistency and goal. I know Kyle Hayton has been, I think it's safe to say he's been average at best this season. They can do some damage. It'll be interesting to see how the Olympics affects them.
Yeah, they'll lose their coach for those weeks. And yeah, I think that's enough of that. ECAC hockey, the easy answer, I think, is Clarkson. They're just 1 point back of Cornell, and Clarkson will host Cornell here. They already won at Lina. That's Cornell's only loss on home ice and only loss in the conference. So Clarkson's got that going. The race for third and fourth, I think there's another point of separation there with the Union in third and Harvard in fourth. I expect those teams to kind of stay there in some order. And then a real log jam in the 5 through 8 spots, which you're going to see some great battles there because those are the home ice positions, for that first round of the playoffs, 5, 6, 7, 8. And Colgate's good, Dartmouth's good, Yale's pretty good. Princeton can be good. They're still looking, I think, for a little bit of consistency. So those are some big games and races to watch down the stretch. We talked about Clarkson a little bit in our Trackler, and I haven't been able to watch them yet. I haven't seen them yet this season, so that'll be interesting to me as far as what we see there. Hockey East. This one, I think, is the most compelling race in terms of not knowing what to expect, and I think there's still a lot out there to be decided. Boston College is 13-5 in the conference, and they're in first place. Boston College is 0-5-3 in non-conference games. So that's maybe a little bit of an indictment or question mark, at least, about how good this BC team may or may not be. Northeastern could score a ton of goals. They're right there in second place. And as we stated earlier, Providence is a team, I think, that we're expecting to have a big stretch run here. I think that Providence team is it for me. Anybody that you're gonna keep an eye on out there, out east, Bus?
I think Providence makes the most sense. I mean, they just from the fact that they've got, I think, a fairly favorable schedule as they come down the home stretch here. They've got two versus Vermont. They play that's at Vermont. They play Maine. They've got a home and home with Lowell and at UMass. So, you know, I think that I think the schedule sets up nicely for them. And the other thing I really look at with them is just, you know, I like those two pieces at the top of the scoring column for them in Foley and Brian Pino. I mean, those are two solid veteran players. And I think in a league like Hockey East, which is so wide open, you know, I think having a couple guys like that in the top of the lineup, who've played a lot of games. I mean, Pino's played 144 games. That's a lot of college hockey.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I just, you know, and again, I kind of fall back on, you know, they're a team that's been through it. They, and I think that they've really, you know, first half of the season, they were kind of scuffling a little bit, but over the last couple months, they've really found their stride at the, I think. If they could just stop playing so many overtime games, they'd be in better shape, but
yeah,
that's what happens. They kind of squandered one the other day.
Yeah, and you know, that adds up over the season, but I think they're in good shape. Next up, let's talk NCHC. Denver in first right now, 31 points from 16 games. Their record, of course, 8-4-4-3-0. We'll get to the overtimes and shootouts in a little bit here on the podcast.
What? Just reading numbers?
Lottery numbers. So you got St. Cloud with a couple games in hand in second place, and then a three-way tie for third, Minnesota Duluth, North Dakota, and Western Michigan. What are you thinking out there?
Wow, that's a good question.
Denver's going to lose Troy Terry to the Olympics.
Yeah.
St. Cloud is going to lose Will Borgen to the Olympics.
I'd rather lose Will Borgen than Troy Terry.
Yeah, I think so. And then international player for North Dakota is also going, Ludwig Hoff. He's a sophomore forward. Yep. For 7 points. So a couple guys will be headed out from that league. Will it make a difference? I think Troy Terry probably the biggest impact among that group. And you know, from a standings point of view, I mean, I guess St. Cloud State kind of has, because of those games in hand, has kind of a built-in advantage. And they led the division or led the conference for most of the first half as well, but kind of came back to earth a little bit in January. So that'll be a team to watch, of course, St. Cloud State. When they're on, Minnesota Duluth is super scary. I don't think it's as scary as they were last year, but they're a good team too. And North Dakota,
yeah, I don't.
It seems to be like the team of splits, you know. Every tie and a loss, tie and a win, win and a loss. You know, every weekend it just seems that way.
Yeah, and I don't think Duluth is the team I think I would kind of mark. Just from the standpoint of, I don't think they've played their best hockey yet. Mm-hmm. You know, they went through a stretch earlier in the, I want to say right before Christmas or right around, you know, right before the holidays, where they were just incredibly dinged up. And obviously, you know, they lost a ton from last year, from the team that made it to the national championship game. And, you know, I think they're just kind of now getting to the point where they're really comfortable, you know, starting to kind of develop some chemistry. And, you know, it showed over the last month or so. They've been pretty good since about the, you know, the beginning of December. You know, their only losses are they lost a shootout, in a literal shootout, not an actual like overtime shootout, a 7-5 game.
So not a literal shootout.
Oh yeah, no, just a fire wagon hockey game, but then
Figurative
figurative shootout, I guess. And then their only other losses are 1-0 at Minnesota State, which, you know, on a Tuesday night. And I should add, on a Tuesday night that came, you know, that was 2 days after they swept North Dakota in Duluth. And then they lost a 2-1 game against St. Cloud. So, I mean, they're playing, I feel like they're starting to gain momentum. And they've got a
WCHA.
nice schedule. And, you know,
Yeah.
sorry, I look at their schedule too, and you know they're at Denver this weekend, and then they get Miami at home. They go to Western Michigan, who's just been crushed by injuries, and then they close with Omaha at home. So,
There it is.
not a bad way to close the year.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. And I mean, a lot of those games are going to be on TV, and they're great to check out. It'll be good to see. The other thing, I mean, similar to the Big Ten, if you look at the tournament criteria as it currently stands, you see a lot of teams from this league in the mix. And with the schedule and the way things are going to play out, you could end up with a Minnesota Duluth team on the four line, and they're going to go up
Oh,
against the
yeah.
number one seed in that first round. It just feels like it's setting up for that Friday afternoon, you know, first game of the
Out
tournament.
somewhere.
There goes number one seed. So, I don't know. It kind of feels like it's pointing in that direction. So we'll see what happens with them and how that all shakes down. WCHA, certainly, last alphabetically. Northern Michigan is
But number one in our heart.
leading that league. We won't call you the leftover league. So we got Northern Michigan in first place, Bowling Green, Minnesota State right behind. Again, I think you look at, from a national standpoint, what Minnesota State has done, and they're kind of maybe the Providence down there of the best team in our league is in third place. So that's something to consider. But I liked what I saw from Bowling Green at the GLI. I caught those games on TV, and the Falcons look pretty good. I mean, that's a decent team, and I think they're going to make some noise in that league.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, they've been incredibly consistent this entire season. I you know, haven't put together a ton of, you know, they've only lost back-to-back games, I think, twice.
Yeah, that's right. And two of those
And,
were recently at Northern, which is the difference between being in
yeah,
first
they
and
got swept
second.
at Northern.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. But you know, they've got a big series this weekend. They play Michigan Tech at home, and you know, Michigan Tech clearly not as good as they were last year, but still, you know, one of the better teams in that league. So this is that'll be a good test. But yeah, I think that, you know, there's a little bit of a drop off, I think, in the WCHA once you get past the top three. But those top three teams are, you know, are pretty good.
Yeah,
You know, Northern Michigan clearly
there's nothing to mess with there.
scores a lot of goals.
Yeah. What do you say we get to a couple of questions? We've been soliciting them here on Facebook and also via our Twitter accounts. Seems we've got a couple viewers checking out the stream, so thank you and welcome if you just want to say what's up and leave a comment, or if you have any questions, go ahead and comment below. This will get to a topic that we, played around with a little bit and are found on a cocktail napkin this week. And this question came earlier today from Michael Peterson. Should there be a standard overtime rule for all conferences? If so, what would you suggest? Yes is the first part of that. I think standard format is something that is desired, and the what would we suggest part, Bus? Let's talk about our personal preferences, and then let's talk about maybe, I guess first what we want to see, and then what we think we will see, in the future. And one of the things that really strikes me that we'll get into a little more is how are they going to make the decision? What factors are they going to give the most consideration to? So, where are you, Bus, on what would you like and what do you think will happen?
I think we've talked about this in the past, and I don't have a problem playing just a regular OT, 5 minute overtime, 5 on 5. And if the game ends in a tie, it's a tie.
I'm down.
That would be that. Yeah, that would be my preference. I don't, and I know we've definitely talked about this before, but in terms of, people, maybe fans say, it's a tie. Nobody, there's no win, there's no loss. But, if you're a player, depending on the circumstances of a game, if you come back and rally from 2 goals in the third period to tie, that feels like a win. Vice versa, on the other side, if you blow a 2 goal lead late and end up tying, that feels like a loss. So I'm not too caught up in the somebody has to win, the somebody has to lose. That would be my preference. It's just, the old 5 minute OT, and if it ends even, that's the way it ends.
Yeah, there are some that are more satisfying or more representative of how the game went, I think. One game I saw earlier this year, Yale led Cornell at home in the Whale, 2-0 midway through the second period. Cornell scores in the last minute of the second, and then the Big Red get 2 goals in the third, so all of a sudden they're 2-0 down to 3-2 ahead. And then, of course, Yale scores in the last minute of the third. There's a game, both, no goals in overtime. A point apiece is probably the right result there, And you don't have to go play 3-on-3 for a few minutes and then get into a shootout and whatever else. To me, you don't have to do that. But, I was raised in hockey in the 80s, and you're a few years older than me, so, we kind of grew up with it. But there are so many. Even college-age players right now who have seen, ties really take a bad reputation, and they don't know anything other than to end games and shootouts. So I could see that side of it too. This is a generalization, but more or less, the Western leagues use some sort of shootout format. The Eastern leagues don't. After the 65 minutes of play, let's go into that room in Naples. How do you think arguments will be presented? And who's going to stand their ground and who can give a little bit?
Wow. Oh, man. That's an interesting question. And I think, oh boy, where do you even start with that?
Well, yeah, there's a number of factors to
I mean, I.
consider. So, yeah, we can start there. To me, the first one is standings integrity, and then furthermore,
Right.
the integrity because you're not compared in your league for national tournament selection. You compare nationwide. So, if, let's take last weekend, North Dakota and Denver going to the shootout, going to that 3-on-3 format, and Denver wins. To what that means to Yale, Northeastern, you know, Cornell, BC, whoever it is out east, it doesn't matter. So who are you doing it for? Your fans, season ticket holders? Right. Is that it? And you know, not a lot of revenue, you know, not a lot of universities are saying hockey is a revenue sport for us. So I'd probably give a little bit there if I was, you know, what are we making the decision for and what's the right reason? In this case, it might not be the fans. I would need a little more than that.
You know, with that in mind. You know, with that in mind, too, I don't know that any – I've never gone to a hockey game and said, boy, I sure hope I get to see a shootout.
I've walked out of hockey games before the shootout started.
Yeah, exactly. Very anticlimactic.
Get off my lawn.
But
I'll beat the parking rush.
Yeah. 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 Reached that point, haven't we? But yeah, I just –
Not people like it, though. There's a lot of people standing up for those things, and they go nuts.
So. Yeah, they sure do. You know, but it's so artificial. And I think, you know, ultimately the point you have to make is, and it's pretty much what you brought up, is what does it mean?
Yeah.
In the end, what does it mean? It's meaningless, more or less.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't give you it's not an accurate measure of one team being better than another. You know, is it an accurate measure of a shooter having a better move than the goalie is able to react? You know, I don't know. It just seems
you got crummy ice.
It just seems so.
It's yeah,
artificial.
It is artificial. That's a good word for it. And then, you know, because this will be a nationwide overtime thing, you have to further extend the question to, will shootout results, they'll have to be factored in some way, shape, or form into your RPI rating and your pairwise. You know, so if we're at a holiday tournament in New Hampshire and, you know, Western Michigan beats UMass Lowell in a shootout of a semifinal game in December, I mean, there's a ratings comparison point, because that's the only time those teams are going to play, you know? And what was the more reflective measure of those teams? That they were even that night, you know? So I don't know. I think the more I'm talking about it, the more I'm, you know, I was willing to give a little bit of ground on that and say, shootout, okay, but that 3-on-3 second overtime thing, I'm not down with that. But the more I think about
it. No, now you're talking.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, you're talking yourself out of the shootout.
Yeah, I really am.
Well, and especially when it comes, you know, I don't mind it in the league thing where, you know, I'm okay with that, you know, in the conference standings. But if you're moving on and as you said, you're using it as a point of comparison to, you know, potentially select NCAA tournament teams based on head to head. Can you imagine the first team to get left out of the NCAA tournament because they lost a shootout?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That would not go over well.
Yeah. All right, we'll send our talking points down to Naples so that we've got a spot at the table. Coaches,
yeah, exactly.
You're welcome.
We solved your problem.
We fixed college hockey. We can go home now.
Next.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's where we kind of are with overtime. Those are our thoughts. And, of course, thank you, Michael, for the question. Twitter questions. Let's see what we've got here. And you may have a few more than I did. As we kind of look through this, Howard Schuster checks in, longtime podcast listener. Hello, Howard. Does Clarkson have a legitimate chance to make the Frozen Four? Let's kind of go back to what what we said. I wouldn't put them as a favorite to make the Frozen Four, but I certainly would put them in that group of 12 to 13 teams that would not surprise me. You know, that weekend, that regional weekend is always bananas, and many people consider it the best weekend of the year in college hockey. Those 12 games over 3 days at four venues. You talk about you're going to have to play well at the right time, and whoever gets hot, you know, and we've seen teams, a lot of teams, make runs from lower seeded positions into Frozen Fours. You know, you get a Michigan State team in 07 was one that won the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, Union, I think, was a 3 or 4 maybe when they won it in Philly. So, yeah, I think they have a legitimate chance. I think that, you know, if you start with great goaltending, which they have with Kylie, that's a good place to start as any. And then they've got a really good top line as well. So that's those are some good ingredients there. And then, you know, all the things you hear about. Depends where you're sent. Depends who your matchups are. Depends what the officiating standard is. And then the hockey comes forth. So there's a lot to think over. But Clarkson's got as good a chance as any. They've got Quinnipiac and Princeton this weekend on the road. This comes after 4 straight home games, and they were 1-1 and 2 in those home games. The Eastern Ivies, Harvard, Dartmouth, Yale, Brown, came through Chiel and really gave it to Clarkson a little bit, including a wild 6-6 game. With Harvard, that broke the long winning streak for Clarkson. And then I think getting on the road might be okay for them. Get away, get together. They had an alumni weekend last weekend. A lot of people were back for it, kind of winter festival type thing up in Potsdam. So Clarkson's got to reload here, and you know, you turn the calendar to February and away you go. So that's kind of where I am with Clarkson. I think they're in a large group of teams that certainly have a legitimate chance to make the Frozen Four.
Yeah, no question. I think this is probably as wide open a year in terms of who can make the Frozen Four, who could win a title, as we've seen in some time. You know, I think last year you kind of looked at Denver and you're like, yeah, they're going to be there. Or in the years past, North Dakota or, you know, Boston College or somebody like that, Boston University. You know, you always kind of had that team in the back of your head. This year, I mean, you just roll the dice. You could ask me today which 4 teams I think are going to make it, and I would tell you 4 different teams, and I would say tomorrow.
Yeah, certainly on Monday.
Or yesterday. I mean,
after
it's just
a weekend of games, so it changes your mind so quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's that. Impressions of Danton exactly. Cole in year one.
Yeah.
You start.
You know, I've seen Michigan State a couple times. So I've seen them in person, actually. And you know what? They're 9-16 overall. They're in last place in the Big Ten by a pretty hefty margin. But I will say this. They play hard. And that's something you couldn't say about Michigan State in years past, recent years.
Right.
You know, there certainly is a talent gap there. That their top line is really good.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
if they could just play one line games, they'd be pretty good. Because that top line is pretty spectacular. Yeah, exactly. I want every game to be 3-on-3. Because
yeah.
Hurost and Kotarenko and Lewandowski, yeah, that's a good top line. But you know what? They play hard. They play with energy. They don't give up. And to me, those are the I think Michigan State fans knew going in that there wasn't a whole lot in the cupboard in terms of talent. But if you can get the guys to play hard and buy in, you know, that buy-in is there. It would be almost impossible for the Arrow not to point up, right, you know, after the recent seasons right that they've had. But
and it comes in a year when the Big Ten, you know, opponents are so good, like relatively, you know.
Yeah,
there's no breathers on that schedule.
No. No, and you know, it's been tough going for them the last few weeks. But they're getting better. They're getting better. Every, you know, they're playing hard. They're getting better. The goals are starting to come. You know, they struggled to score last year. They're starting to score a little bit more this year. I think they like the recruits that they've got coming in. They've got some talented kids that are going to be in East Lansing pretty soon. And, you know, Big Ten hockey's turning around. You know, it was kind of a boring league, but it hasn't been boring this year. And I don't think it's gonna be boring from here on out.
No, it's not. As far as Danton and his individual impact, I think that some of the pride has come back to that program. Not to say, you know, that, you know, the way things went with Tom Anastas was, I don't know. I don't think toxic. Some people might use that word. I'd say more stale, kind of, it just got into a place where it was hard to get out of. So, it was time for a change. And I think, Danton's, certainly, coaching experience in the past at the collegiate level and with USA Hockey had an impact, and his playing career at Michigan State as well. But there's some renewed energy, I think, inside of that building, you know, with support staff, things like that. So, I think we got together, Bus. November, and I don't know if you remember what my scouting report was. I had seen Ferris State and Michigan play, and then I saw Ferris State and Michigan State play, and I said if Cornell played any of these teams, they'd win 6-1. it turns out that Cornell team is pretty good, as it looked early on, at least to me. So
yeah.
So that was maybe my best call of the year. I think so. I gotta hang my hat
prescient
on that one.
Your,
yeah.
I will say another thing too. You know, about Danton Cole, that kind of, you know, checks the boxes. Is he's a local guy. He's from Lansing.
Right.
So, right. You know, not you know, the coaching experience obviously in college and with the. With the under 18 teams or the development program is huge. You know, obviously a Michigan State alum is huge, but also, you know, a Lansing guy who went to Waverly High School. You know, I think that adds an extra layer to it that, you know, I don't know how, what the effect is, but you know, you mentioned that pride. And I think that's an, you know, the pride in the community is something else that, that's nice to have around.
Yeah, definitely. Let's do you want to, we could wrap it up here, I mean, but we could keep going. Do you want to talk about Olympics at all? What are you expecting? Other than nostalgia, and we do that every year with this week of inch, but if you go back and look at the 2006 and 2007 American Hockey Coaches Association All-America teams, there's your Olympic roster, at least for the United States in most cases. And you've got an intriguing tournament. I don't know, you know, certainly there's less buzz around it. I think the entire Olympics, there's less buzz about it, but what are your thoughts and interest level on the hockey at the Olympics?
Well, I'm not obviously, you know, it was so exciting with the NHLers in the past, just because it, you know, the best of the best and duking it out, and you know, didn't always work out great for the U.S. but you know, it was fun hockey to watch. I think it's a curiosity, at least to start out, and I'm sure I'll end up watching a bunch of it. But just from the standpoint of, you know, it's all these guys that we, you know, like you said, used to watch back in, you know, 5, 8, 10 years ago, and now they're kind of reemerging, you know, and you get to see these guys again. Like, you know, where was you know, whatever happened to so-and-so, or, you know, this guy was around and great in college and kind of disappeared, and, you know, now he's reemerged, and that part of it is, I think, is intriguing to me. Just to see, you know, these guys that maybe we've lost a little bit of track of, and now they're sort of coming back into our collective consciousness, and just to, you know, see how they've evolved and see how they perform on this stage.
Yeah, it'll be good. Tony Granato is certainly head coach. Keith Elaine is one of the assistants, and I'm not sure who the other assistant coach is, or some of the staff. Got to send a shout out to BK, Brian Kelly. We're handling the PR duties over there. Longtime SID at Boston University. So yeah.
Their coaching bench is, by the way,
I lost you there for a second.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say their coaching bench is deep.
Yeah,
they've got Tony Granato. They've got Keith. Chris Chelios.
All right.
Ron Ralston and Scott Young.
Good deal.
So let's, yeah.
I think it's going to depend on what time of night the games are for me, and or, you know, or streaming, you know, if it's something you could do in the office or what. But that'll be interesting. But yeah, I think I know where you're going with my favorite, one of my favorite all-time college players was on the roster in Noah Welch. A lot of ECAC guys I covered in that league. You know, from Ben Scrivens in Canada, David Leggio, Mark Arcabello, some Yale guys, you know, as well. Brock Little, I think. So it'll be a good a good group, and certainly, obviously, Ryan Donato. We talked about him on the Trackler a little bit with his going away. What that means probably for his Hobie candidacy is not great, but that doesn't mean he's not a great college player. And better, I think, go there. Do the Olympics thing, man. Opening ceremonies, Olympic Village, compete internationally, play with guys who are older. That'll set you up for pro. And obviously his father, Ted, was an Olympian. So that discussion was probably short and quick, and even if it sets Harvard back a little bit, I think it's the right call. So congratulations to Ryan Donato on that.
Absolutely the right call.
Podcast deterioration is usually what sets in about now. Anything else since we published the napkin that you were thinking about for the overtime formats?
Somebody on Twitter posted, I think it might have been Dartmouth.
Yeah.
Am I an idiot? Might have been Dartmouth Hockey. Suggested NHL 94.
Oh, right.
You know, pull out the Sega. Yeah. Maybe figure out how to wire it to the big screen. And
No, you got to get the big tube television. Keep it authentic.
I still have a tube television. I still have a tube television devoted solely to my Sega Genesis.
Well, if you still got a Genesis, that's even better. I listened to a podcast tonight on the 30 for 30 does some audio only, some podcasts, and they did one about the evolution and impact of Madden Football, the video game, and that Genesis really helped launch that because it finally had a graphics card and video card that they weren't having to go through personal computers. So that really lifted things for that franchise, and it's worth a listen if you hit it on the old iTunes.
Yeah, I might have to check that out.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. So, good for the commute.
I have to be honest. I got a PlayStation 4 for Christmas. Even though I'm closer to 50 than I am to 40, so it seems like kind of goofy, but you know, I've got the requisite EA Sports games.
Yeah.
And I really struggle with the Madden. There's too much going on there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, this isn't Tecmo.
I haven't played a game of Madden since, geez, maybe college. And I graduated college in 1999. So that's been a while for me. I've never had a video game console, you know. Roommates and things have, and did a little Tiger Woods golf on the old PlayStation, but that was about it. So I can't bring much to the table there. I'm still partial to Nintendo Ice Hockey, and the, of course, lineup of all four fat guys for Poland and dominate. That's it. That's it.
They were tough in the corners.
Oh, we take away the middle of the ice. We're like, Jack Lemaire would love us. Lemaire-ski. So, yeah, that was good.
We got a score. I got a score update.
We got a ton of scores. Good. What do we got?
Well, we got from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome.
Calgary. They're hot right now.
He is. No, they're not hot tonight.
Mm.
Tampa Bay's hung a 7 on them thus far.
Oh.
7-4.
Well, they're the best team in the country, or league, I should say.
6:14 left in the third. Two goals for Alex Killorn.
Harvard man. You know what?
Two goals for...
Go ahead. Two goals for Killorn.
Two for Conacher.
Canisius.
And one for Matthew Pekka.
Quinnipiac.
There you go.
I'm looking into something here. Speaking of out-of-town scores. And I don't know if this can be a typo or not. It can't be because it's so uniquely weird.
Is it Justin Hall?
No, this is tomorrow's game. This is Friday, Groundhog Day. Maybe that's what it is. Phil sees a shadow and then checks out Sacred Heart against Robert Morris. This game, Friday, is at 10:35 a.m. I don't know. I don't know. So.
At Sacred Heart. Yeah. Yeah,
at Sacred Heart.
On purpose?
All right. Yeah, I guess.
Well. Yeah.
So, anybody who's got a clue on that, we'd love to hear it. Hit us on Twitter and or Facebook and let us know what the deal is with that. So, way to go. A little breakfast hockey. So, that's the news on that one. Get the weekend started right. Actually, you know what? I might watch that webcast at work. Check out
nice.
Check out Bob at Sacred Heart. So, yeah, so that's your weird one of the weekend, I think. Super Bowl. We love it.
Don't care.
Don't care too much. Football's on Saturday.
I probably won't even.
I won't even watch it, to be honest with you.
What do you do if you're not watching the Super Bowl? Duck into some of those video games or DVR stuff?
Yeah, I'll probably play that.
Binge? Binge
Yeah.
watch a series of some sort?
Exactly. I don't care. I just don't care.
Yeah. To me, it's more
I
the
didn't
pop
watch last
culture
year's.
thing, you know. It's
Yeah.
the commercials, the Timberlake at halftime, the power goes out, the Falcons choke, you know, whatever it is. So I think
Bird
that's
flies into
kind
the
of what it is. Make food in crock pots. That's a big part of the Super Bowl.
Well, yeah. That is, that's, yeah, that is.
Oh, that was one I was thinking
Would be
about
better if
with the overtime format. Do like the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. Except you have like the regional food of the area. So all the Atlantic hockey teams get plates of buffalo wings and 60 seconds on the clock and smashing down brats out in Madison.
Hockey East is just big bowls of piping hot chowder.
Yeah, right.
Coney dogs here in Michigan.
Yeah. So that was one. Yeah, I forgot to throw that on the list, but it crossed my
I
mind.
like that.
Yeah.
I would watch that bet more than a shootout.
Oh, for sure. And then we could even give like a Kobayashi Hobie Award or something at the end of the year.
Hobayashi.
Kobayashi. Most eating contest victories during the
This is a guy
season.
skating up to a big guy skates up to a big plate of burgers.
Yeah. Dunking them in water. That's the thing I don't watch. I will never watch that hot dog thing. It grosses me out. I saw some of it once. I was like, yeah, no. I'm good with that. You can have that one.
Yeah.
I'll be at the golf course.
Yeah. Yeah, that I can't. Yeah, I can't sit through that either.
So,
That
all
just
right.
disgusts me.
All right. Well, let's put a wrap on this. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we've done good.
Yeah. Thanks for those of you who are listening live or will listen as we leave this on the internet on our Facebook page, and we'll also post the link to the Inch Writers blog. It'll be a little sloppier, I think, than it has been in the past as far as transitions and intros since we kind of just launched and ran with it, but maybe we'll clean that up in a little bit in post, Mike. Get a good entry
Yeah.
point. So that's it. Thanks a lot. Thanks for checking us out on Inch Writers. We're still around. We love the game. Still into college hockey, but just not like we used to. So,
And well, you know, not to
yeah, we're
not
not
to
running away for the thing, but.
also not to like put an anchor on anybody's calendar, but yeah, we'll probably be, I wouldn't be surprised if we podcasted the day of the NCAA selection show.
Yeah, Selection Sunday podcast is always a big one. Probably we'll probably make that a thing. And then usually that Monday too, after the opening weekend.
Yep.
After regionals, Monday or Tuesday, we can get into that.
Yep.
So that's yeah, that's what we can expect. Pencil it in. Don't make reservations. Don't buy a plane ticket, but
Right.
just know it'll probably be there.
Don't
Non-refundable.
punch it.
This is non-refundable.
Yep.
Yeah, how can we talk about all the teams that punch their tickets? You love it.
When is, I don't think I've ever had a ticket punched in my life. Maybe on a train once.
There's a local coffee shop. When I get my coffee, they'll punch my card, and then after like eight of them, I get a free coffee. Does that count? Is that a ticket? I
So,
don't think it's a ticket.
you get a punch card for the NCAA tournament, like you make four or something, you get a I don't know. It's like a free sub or something.
Yeah. What do you think the origin of that is? Was it old airline tickets that they would punch, or train tickets maybe? What's the origin of that
freeze? I think it was train.
Probably trains. Yeah.
Train. It's gotta be train.
Yeah, we'll have to see. We'll have to see. You want great?
Somebody know. It's got to be a train. Somebody.
You want great baseball trivia? This is high level difficulty.
God.
Five players have won MVP award in the major leagues with exactly four letters in their first name and four letters in their last name. You've got 60 seconds.
Holy smokes.
I don't know what kind of day I was having. A buddy of mine texted this to me, and I went 5 for 5 and just ripped him off. I could not believe it. I was locked in.
Four letters in their first name and four letters in their last name.
Yep.
Jeff Kent?
Correct.
Is he? Now, here's the stumbling block. Babe Ruth.
Correct. He won one. I think like his end of his career, the MVP award started. So there's two.
Jeff Kent, Babe Ruth. There's three more?
Yeah.
Hmm. Huh. Wow, that's tough.
Yeah.
Probably somebody terrible.
Babe Ruth is the only guy in the Hall of Fame out of the four other answers, which is pretty telling.
Yeah. Tells me the rest of them are terrible.
Yeah, I wouldn't say terrible, but...
Or not. Terrible adjacent.
Yeah, well, one guy's not in the Hall of Fame for not his career.
How about Jack Cust?
Nope. How about Pete Rose?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Pete Rose. And the other two got to dig in a little bit. 70s, 60s and 70s. Fred Lynn?
60s and 70s. Oh, yeah.
Freddie Lynn and Vida Blue.
I didn't know he won an MVP.
Yeah, he won a. I think he won Cy Young MVP and maybe Rookie of the Year. Like he did the Fernando thing, something weird like that. But yeah, that was a good one. So spring training a couple weeks away. Jeez. Can't wait. So, all right, shoutouts. You want to do shoutouts?
Yeah, I got to shout out the Lansing Catholic Junior Varsity Girls Basketball team.
Here we go.
Cougars? Got a big
Cougars, right?
Big game tomorrow. Cougs.
How are
fire
we
fire up Cougs?
How are we doing here? What do we got?
We are
13-6.
13-0. Yep.
Must be the assistant coaching on this club is top level.
Yeah.
I think so.
I'm undefeated.
Yeah.
Got a big game at Eaton Rapids tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm kind of made my basketball coaching debut earlier this year. Working at small college in the Northeast, traveled with the team to a pair of games in Florida. And sat on the bench for those, assistant athletic director, and we lost by 55 and 51 in those two games. So that was
gratitude.
So we're getting better. We got 4 points better, but there's room for growth within the organization. So that's that.
That's all right.
Yeah.
That's the most basketball talk I've had on this podcast.
Ever. So, all right, good luck to the Lansing Catholic junior varsity girls at Eaton Rapids on Friday. And
yep.
Have fun at the rinks, everyone, this weekend. Enjoy the games. Enjoy the rest of the season. And we'll probably check in again on the podcast around NCAA tournament time. For Mike Idlebis, this is Joe Gladyszewski. You have been listening to the Inch Podcast.